Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
That's a gay ass podcast.
What? That's a gay ass podcast.
What?
A really, really, really gay podcast that we call That's a Gay Ass Podcast.
That's a gay ass name for a gay ass podcast.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay, babe? It's me, Eric Williams, and this week's guest is a celebrity astrologer, Aliza Kelly. She's worked with Drew Barrymore, Kiki Palmer, Bella Hadid, and now my gay ass. Speaking of, we did record this a few days before my 36th birthday, which was September 21st, so it's a bit of a therapy sesh, in addition to a giggle fest and astrology deep dive. So please enjoy the dream that is Aliza Kelly. It's Gay Christmas on That's a Gay Ass Podcast because we have celeb astrologer Aliza Kelly here. And I need to tell you a couple things. Number one, I am an astrology gay, but elementary. I'm a huge believer, but I've never been able to talk to somebody like you. And also, my birthday is in 3 days. So I feel like I'm really celebrating this new year with a pro. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. Aliza Kelly, how the hell are you?
Oh my gosh, I'm so good. And I'm so excited for us to have this conversation right on the precipice of your birthday.
I know.
It's you have truly such an important birthday this year. You know, I guess I'm no burying the lead here, but you know that your birthday corresponds with an eclipse this year, right?
I don't know that, Aliza.
Yes, it does. Yes.
Is that meaning that like I need to really tap into, what does it mean if my birthday is happening during an eclipse?
The short of it is that when you have a birthday, so for our listeners, every birthday that you experience, you get a special chart for that year. It's called a solar return chart. Mm. And that solar return chart is a snapshot of the sky at the exact moment that the sun is in the exact place it was when you were born, in the year you were born, but then all the other planets are different, right?
Gotcha.
So the sun, we look to see when the sun is totally aligned. That's the solar return aspect of it. But then we look to see where all of the other planets are. So for this year, it would be, where are the other planets in 2025? And for you, that is going to be corresponding with an eclipse, which means that this next year of your life is going to have that eclipse energy infused in it. What is eclipse energy? It is change. It is growth. It is transformation. It's big endings, big beginnings. It's like, it's a year to remember. It's a pivotal year.
I've been feeling that. Like, I've been having some, dare I say, growing pains. And I'm a big therapy girly. And I feel like astrology is sort of like a sister of therapy, where it really like helps you look within and feel empowered. Because if we're being honest, I am the type of girly who always knew, I think, my purpose deep down, but had to deal with like layers and layers and layers of shame, self-doubt, insecurity, need for validation. I think a lot of it, of course, is like being gay, growing up in Missouri. And I think what a lot of our listeners are going to be excited to hear about is how someone like me can sort of use my queerness as like, of course, our superpower, but also like the baggage that a lot of us are working through from feeling sort of othered. Would you say that astrology and queerness, like, how do you think queer people can find meaning in astrology?
Well, you know, I think that, and I might get a little emotional because I was thinking about this last night and it was bringing up a lot. I love thinking of astrology as sort of like the sister science to therapy. I went into therapy at the same time I started learning astrology. And for me, this expression of self-exploration through astrology has always been paramount in my practice. And I think that when, as it relates to self-discovery, as it relates to identity, as it relates to queerness, as it relates to exploring purpose and selfhood and one's individual sort of unique journey in this lifetime, I think that what astrology can offer is this deep compassion for who we are.
Preach. And
compassion cultivates courage. We are not going to be brave unless we are first compassionate with ourselves.
Yes. I mean, if we're being honest, I say some hateful shit to myself. I think that's part, one of my constant conversations in therapy is like, whose voice is that? Whose voice is that? Who is saying that? And I think a lot of it is like the very obvious, like people that you would think I'm hearing from growing up. But I think that I can feel when I'm tapped into like my own compassion, because it does lead to confidence and like conviction in what I'm doing. Because I think at the end of the day, a lot of my fears are that I don't know myself. I can't read my own gut. And I think that I obviously can, and I've worked so hard to be able to hear my gut louder than the critics and the hateful shit that sometimes pops into my head. So I think that.
But you also said that you know who you are, and that you do feel you know who you are.
Yeah.
So do you feel that there's this, that's at the core of your onion? At the core is you knowing who you are, but then there's layers above that where you're like, I'm not sure if I can listen to my intuition. I'm not sure what my intuition is telling
me. That's exactly it. I knew since I was a kid that I was like meant to entertain, tell a story, make people laugh, have a big impact on this world, but layers and layers and layers of like, yeah, but do you deserve anything? Are you a hack? Are you a freak? Should you, honestly, like this podcast, when I first put this podcast out, people who have listened for a long time have heard this, but I freaked out the first calendar year of this podcast, because every week I would have to ask myself, is it bad? Am I bad? Who cares? Should I be doing this? Why am I putting out an interview like when there are so many other gay guys with podcasts? Like, I was like, there's already Las Culturistas. Why am I a gay guy doing this? Which of course was my own limited thinking. But that's like some of the onion layers that I constantly work through.
Yeah. You know, I something that I think about often that one of my mentors shared many years ago, which was so invaluable, was you don't just listen to one artist on a playlist. You know, you want to know different musicians and musical artists. Like, you don't want to just have one artist that you default to all the time forever. So in the same way, like, even if you are, you know, me as an astrologer, there's other astrologers out there, right? Like, but good, because you want to have new voices. You want to have different voices. You want to have different perspectives. You know, you want to have podcasts that maybe are adjacent, where they're focused on queerness. They're focused on pop culture. They're focused on like different perspectives of what that experience is. But it's good to have different perspectives. You can't just have one.
Yeah.
So like that, even the range within your niche is really important and significant.
It's so clear to me that you are so good at your job, because I think that even before we get into like the specifics of the astrology stuff, I think you're so good at like helping people find perspective. I'm already seeing that like you can zoom out in ways that I think a lot of times I zoom, and then all I can see is like, I can't see the forest for the trees. But before we get into some specific astrologies, since I am hosting a gay ass podcast, I would love to ask you, Aliza Kelly, my gay ass podcast question, which was, who was your first gay? Was it someone on television, a classmate in high school? Who was?
I guess my first gay is my uncle, who I share a birthday with.
And then his son,
who came out before he did, which was
Stop.
T. Yeah. which was T.
What? I need the NBC sitcom Yesterday.
I know. It's really cute. They're part of my LA fam. But I grew up in New York City, and I am very grateful for having been exposed to lots of different types of people from the time I was really young. I would say, like, really, my first gay may have been a shopkeeper who worked at this vintage store on the Upper West Side. His name was Alan. Alan and Susie's was the name of the store. And I remember, like, it was like an outing to go there. I would make my mom take me as if we were going to the playground. I'd be like, I want to go to Alan and Susie's, because the store, and like, this was, you know, I was born in 1989, like you, Eric. So like, this is like early 90s New York City. Like, weird, like, it's really different than it looks today in the city, right? Like, it's really characters and eccentrics and people doing very interesting avant-garde things. And there was always some like huge sculptural display in the store window and like big personalities shopping there. Big, you know, who I later learned it was like a great drag shop, right? So like I would go and be exposed to all of these beautiful, amazing people who all had these like big personalities. And as we know, because, you know, drag story time is so important and such an amazing thing, like drag personas are really exciting and inspiring and electrifying for little kids, you know? Yeah.
Well, how like, old would you say that you were when you were going to the store?
Like 4 or 5. And then Rocky Horror became my favorite movie when I was 8. Which now, as like a new mom myself, I'm like, I'm like, when do I show Tallulah Rocky Horror? Is 8 the appropriate age? Like, I'm like playing it back. I'm like, is that the right time to show Rocky Horror? I'm not sure. But I used to dress up as Columbia and go to the 12th Street, make my mom go with me to the 12th Street Theater at midnight for the midnight shows when I was 8 years old. And I would always get called out because they were like, how old are you, kid? And I'd be like, 10. I was not even 10. So yeah, I mean, gay culture and art and, you know, John Waters, Divine, Polyester, like all of it was like it's so in my DNA. It's so deep in there.
It makes so much sense. And I do think that a lot of kids who grew up in New York City are a different breed because they were exposed to so many different, because, you know, a lot of us who did not grow up in a big city like New York only saw the same type of people for the first 18 years of their lives. I think I knew one out gay person, and he was barely out. His name is Ernesto. He was the guy who cut my whole family's hair, and we would talk about his partner as like his friend. That was like the only gay person that I knew. Meanwhile, you're at 8 years old going to Rocky Horror showings, going to your Queenie friend's thrift store on the Upper West Side. And I didn't get to do that until I was 19 years old. And so it makes so much sense that you have this gorgeous gay ass worldview, because it's just been a part of your normal existence since you were a kid.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I do feel incredibly grateful for all of that. I mean, truly, just for like having all of these cultural touch points, you know, being able to be exposed to people who are doing different things and proud of it and challenging the status quo, but also being fabulous and being like and looking stunning and having style and just being themselves, you know, that permission to be oneself is so impactful. And I do want to call out one more important and really deeply meaningful exposure that I had, and this is no pun intended to this, is that I went to an arts high school in the city as well, and it was predominantly gay. And
which school was it? As
a professional performing arts school.
Come on, professional performing arts school.
Whatever. But the reason, something that we did in my school that I didn't really acknowledge and understand for many, many years of how important it was, is that there's an AIDS walk every year. But that whole week, we had AIDS week in our school, which was basically all lectures and panels and conversations, like all regular school programming shut down because it was an arts high school and because AIDS was so damaging in the city, and so many of our teachers came from that time. It was really sort of this like awareness of how do you protect yourself and what are the conversations, and, you know, and there were kids in my class whose parents died of AIDS, right? So understanding how to have that conversation, I didn't realize how important and impactful it would be until 2020, when there's another global pandemic and everyone's like, these things don't happen. And I'm like, wait, understanding of how to community care from this. Yeah. And that, like, understanding community care, and again, I'm just in a very emotional space. Like, I think that and is one of my, that's something that in queer communities is so beautiful and so meaningful, and we all should be looking to and learning a lot from as a society.
I agree. And I think it's kind of the, let's just say the, one of the only positive outcomes of devastation like the AIDS crisis is the ability for a community to come together and build each other up and be survivors. And I think that that's partly why it's so nice to be an adult gay person, to be like, oh wow, I had to go through the shit I went through as a kid to be able to now shun the straight parts of the world that don't speak to me and create my own reality that feels really delicious. And I think that something as devastating as the AIDS crisis created a culture of community building and actually realizing what is important in life, which is not telling people how to live their lives, but actually just banding together.
Yeah.
I do want to get into some specific questions, because it would not be smart for me to have Aliza Kelly on That's a Gay Ass podcast and not get into some of my own personal astrological shit. Where do you like to start when it comes to, like, looking at a birth chart? Like, when you looked at mine, did something jump out at you, or is it helpful if I'm like, here's a specific question?
Both, but I will definitely lead us in that you gave me a birth. First of all, you gave me a co-star table. I hate co-star.
Cancel me.
Cancel right here. But you also gave me a rising sign that is not your real rising sign. So this is important because I incorporate all of this into the understanding of a chart. And because astrology is a symbolic language, to me, there is this really beautiful and interesting correlation between what you were saying of, like, I do know who I am, but sometimes I doubt myself. Sometimes I question myself. Sometimes I'm unsure. And you gave me an incorrect birth chart, right? So to me, that is so, I say this thing called tank. There are no coincidences. Like, there's a synchronicity in that. And being like, I know who I am, but then I have these touch points that are inaccurate.
Yeah.
And what I would love for us to do is actually, like, give you some truths about yourself, which is really just going to be me mirroring it back to you because you already know them. But if you've been working with the wrong birth chart, no wonder it's like all of these things are proving the fact that, like, yeah, you have to, like, fully embrace who you are. You got to get the info right.
Tank, bitch, there are no coincidences. For anybody who doesn't know what actually the tea of what happened is, that I sent Aliza, like, my birthday, the time of my birth, where, and then you responded like, your time here is not correlating to the same birth chart that CoStar says. So I thought my rising was Libra, and it turns out it is actually Taurus.
That's right. But that's not all, you know, because your rising sign is the architecture of your entire chart.
Hmm.
Everything is set up based on your rising sign. So an inaccurate rising sign is it's an inaccurate chart. Like, the whole thing is voided. So all of those, you know, and I know with CoStar, it's the table, but all of those placements of saying, like, your sun is in whatever house, like, all of it is wrong, right? It's not just the rising. Everything is
different.
So
really, I'm like starting fresh.
Starting fresh.
Yeah, which honestly makes sense, because if I'm being fully transparent, I have had a lot of crises in my brain about my own self-worth when it comes to, like, career. I have thought that because I have a day job that, luckily, I'm doing less and less. But because I have a day job and I can't do my art and my creative shit full time, that I'm a failure. And so I've been really working through those feelings of like, okay, actually, I'm able to put my whole pussy into my career. I now have this podcast. I have a solo show that it's like basically me trauma dumping for an hour through stand up. And I'm really, really proud of it. And I'm doing it again in a month in LA. And I just found out I'm doing it eventually at a really cool place in New York that I've been trying to make happen. So like the world is opening up itself to me, but there's been a lot of growing pains and a lot of, self-doubt that I then climb myself out of. And so I think this like restarting my astrological chart does make sense, because I do think I'm like finding out who I am as a confident person for the first time ever.
Yeah. And like even just hearing you say I can't do it, you know, that's not true. Of course, if your will is to be fully profitable from your art, hold on, abundant and prosperous from your art,
yes,
rich as fuck from your art,
yes,
then you can, you will. It's just strategizing, right? It's
yeah,
just in
yeah,
this season, you know, you're doing what you can to figure out how you're going to also like cover all your bases.
Yeah.
But you can and you will. It's just the timing, right?
That's what I've been realizing, because I hit a milestone. For people who listen to the podcast, a lot of these gorgeous listeners go to Substack for these bonus episodes and they pay, you know, it's like $5 a month. But I actually reached a point where I'm surpassing what I was making on Patreon before, which I moved everyone over from Patreon to Substack, blah, blah, blah. All this to say, like, I'm actually making like, you know, after like I get like another like 80 paid subscribers, I can pay my rent from that. And so I'm like,
that's
oh,
huge.
Wow. So like once I hit that benchmark and I'm paying my rent from just this gorgeous community, that I'm seeing the light at the end of the tunnel. And that happened just a few days ago. So it's like, yeah, it's like I'm starting to see like, oh, it's not just me saying mantras to myself, but I do think one day, I do know that one day I'll be able to do this full time.
Definitely. And not just full time for the sake of full time, but like abundantly too.
Well, that's what I'm manifesting. I've always said, and people can feel free to say this is monstrous, but I've literally told my friends, even when I was a starving actor doing a musical for $400 a week, I was like, one day I'm going to be very wealthy.
So mode to be. Yeah.
I feel it in my gut. I'm like, my manifestation is that I'm going to reach a point where like a gorgeous deal goes through and I'm going to take a group of my friends to a villa in Italy. I've been saying that for years, and I make not good money now. However, I'm manifesting that and I know it's going to happen.
However, save the date because it's coming. Block your calendar.
You're
also obviously you can't go to Italy without inviting an astrologer. So
we're going to need our in-house astrologer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's talk about your chart a little bit, because
okay,
I'm very glad that we have the correct information.
Yes.
It is a powerhouse of a chart with lots of heaviness and intensity that you know because you live it and you feel it. And when you learn how to unlock it, there's no stopping you, right?
Yeah.
So I would say that there's like there's two primary things that I want to share with you.
Okay.
So the first one is really apropos because you are having your solar return on a solar eclipse, and it's with this new birth time, this correct birth chart you gave me. Your rising sign is 25 degrees Taurus, which means that your rising sign, your ascendant, is 25 degrees Taurus. Your descendant, which is the opposite, is 25 degrees Scorpio. That's the, you know, if you were looking at this as if it was a clock, it would be the 9 o'clock and the 3 o'clock position. So like the horizontal line.
Yeah.
Ascendant is your mission in this life. That's the Taurus mission. Your descendant is how external situations allow you to sort of become the fully realized version of you. That's the descendant. So already Taurus, Scorpio, we're talking about how do we We're talking about value. That's Taurus. We're talking about how do we protect ourselves? How do we keep ourselves safe? How do we anchor ourselves? And then Scorpio, its opposite is let's go deep. Let's not bullshit. No surface level. Like, I want to get to the bottom of things. I want to unpack. I want to uncover. So for you, those are one and of the same. And the more that you can go deep, uncover, tell your truth, not hide, right? Figure out how you get your power, like how you enter, like you have your villain origin story, right? So now what do you do with it? Mm. How do you move, how do you actualize and alchemize that villain origin story so that it's something that actually like changes your reality today? Right? It can't just be like a sad story. Yeah. It has to be an empowering story. You know what I mean?
I totally get it because it makes a lot of sense that this is, we're talking now because my villain origin story, simply put, is that growing up, my biggest bully was my own twin brother. And
stop. Wait until you find out the rest of the chart.
Oh, I can't fucking wait. Well, and I bring this up because my solo show is literally that is the arc of the story. And I can say that because my brother and I have grown so much. He's grown to be such an incredible parent and person and all of that. But I really grew up being like, I'm a fucking freak. I am a fucking freak. And so I have been ever since coming out and doing this podcast, my mission has been to like, yes, ask the hard questions and talk about our deep baggage and my sexual shame and my use it as like a way to fucking make people feel seen, but also make them laugh and say things that are like toeing the line and all of that. So yeah, there's a lot of intensity to my feelings and baggage that I constantly work through.
Wow. I mean, the reason that I like lost it is because one of the other thing that I want to share with you in your chart, and I'm jumping around a little bit, so I want to get back to another thing, but you are a Gemini moon. Did you know that?
I have had seen that, but I had not really clocked like what that meant ever. So the short answer is not really.
Okay. So Gemini moon is the twins. Your moon is your emotional inner world. And your moon is at 29 degrees of Gemini. So that's sort of how deep into a sign something is the degrees. And a sign goes from 0 to 29. So 29 is the last place it can be. 29 is called the anaretic degree. It's very energetic. Your sun is also at 29 degrees. Your sun is at 29 degrees of Virgo. Gemini and Virgo create a very hard aspect called a square. So you have a sun moon square in your chart, and a sun moon square in your chart is having this this battle between your external reality, that's the sun, and your internal emotional world, that's the moon. And with the moon being in Gemini, the sign of the twins, it's the duality aspect of it. So it's almost like there is this personal battle that you have around your duality, right? Around that you are someone who has multitudes. And maybe for you, that was quite literally expressed as like, there's me, and then there's this like other me that's shaming me. And it's like me looking back at myself, judging me, yes, and saying that like, there's something wrong with this me, right? It's like it's the physical manifestation of the duality.
I hadn't really put it into perspective like that, but that absolutely was part of the fuckery of like, wait a minute, I'm growing up with this person, we share a bedroom, we're in the same school, in the same class, but the way that he is moving through the world is clearly more valuable and accepted than me, but I just happen to be me. But the me, like the crazy context is that my twin brother is 5'4", I'm 6'2". My entire family are short people, and I am the only gay, tall theater freak of the family. And so I have always, yeah, felt like this bumping of like, well, am I allowed to be the tall, gay-ass person when I mean,
like that's a gift, but like
of course now I know it absolutely, but like it was years of like I don't think the way that I was created was as celebrated as the people I'm constantly surrounded by.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and
hey, gay ass girlies, I just read a romance horror book that I think you'd be absolutely obsessed with. Listen to this. It's called House of Rain by New York Times bestselling author Harley LaRue. And at first I was nervous it would be too scary, but y'all, it's scary and horny. And as a newly self-identified slut, I feel seen. Also, it takes place on a remote island in the Pacific Northwest, which I think the Pacific Northwest canonically has the hottest people. So if that doesn't make you squirt, babe, I don't know what will. Also, the book has so many gay-ass themes. I'm talking family drama, there's rumors, manipulation, and again, it's horny as hell. Now, the writing is also so good that it moves real fast and there's kink in it, and you will not be able to put this down. Harley LaRue is a queer writer who gets it. You can find House of Rain by Harley LaRue wherever books are sold, in print and an ebook. The gorgeous deluxe hardcover first printing is only available for a limited time, so grab yours before they are gone, babe.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart. Check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states, thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
And that is the bizarro world, because then you leave this place where you're from and suddenly like you are the, you know, the it girl of town, right? Like it's like, that's not the right context. Like something's wrong with that environment. Not like you are perfect, but you were in an imperfect environment, recognize feeling like that you were the imperfect one in that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it definitely took me to like, I went to NYU for college and immediately felt this like giant paradigm shift. And then I moved to LA 4 years ago from New York because I really felt this need to create a change in my life. And my life has definitely exploded since moving to LA. It's like it feels like the right time at the right place. It feels like, like I've gone from these sort of imperfect worlds to better worlds to now like this is where I'm meant to be.
Yeah. Right. So this journey of finding yourself in spaces, also very important, right? What kinds of physical spaces allow you to exist as yourself and not like in a house with a twin brother and everything is like tiny sized and just like not at the scale that we're talking about here, not at the scale of also even what the impact that you want to have is, which is also another thing that you feel, right? Like you want to do big things. You can't do that when you're like in a tiny little Midwestern village, you know, like a little Christmas town, right? Like that's not going to work.
Yeah, it's giving Buddy the Elf.
It is.
which is my biggest, when I, as an actress, I did the national tour of Elf the Musical playing Buddy the Elf, and it was very,
wow.
It's all very on the nose.
Yeah, right. Like,
and I'm literal. A Jew, so saying on the nose is even a deeper meaning.
Just, yeah, add it, all the layers. So the other thing I wanted to share that I want to make sure I do is that when we talk about this year being a very important one with the eclipses, this 25 degree Taurus, this 25 degree Scorpio descendant, right? These 25 degree points, they are making a very important shape with the north and south nodes in your chart, which have to do with destiny, which are in your chart at 25 degrees Aquarius, 25 degrees of Leo. All of these 25 degree points are in fixed signs. So what this means is that when the nodes of destiny get activated in the sky ever at all, it changes things in your life, because you are not someone who works just like in a casual, like, this is maybe a better way of describing it. For you, it's better for you to have huge, radical, life-altering swings that bulldoze through your reality and change everything in these like massive drama fests than it is to like slowly chip away at something.
Huh.
Having like a bulldozer moment or wrecking ball that kind of like changes the whole landscape in an instant at once, better. Because, and you will see that more gets done in those huge instances than if you're chipping away, because like we get slow and steady wins the race, and you're a Virgo, you don't need me to explain it to you. Like all you ever are doing is like hammering away, mm-hmm. but you can become too self-critical of the hammering away, right?
Girl,
you can become like, well, was today productive enough?
That's and,
like,
all I do.
What even is productive enough? Like yeah. who even cares?
Yeah.
We know that like luck and timing and meeting the right person in the right environment and the right moment, like all of that makes a bigger difference than like chipping away, right?
yeah.
Like you have to be ready for those big things, and that's why the chipping works. Mm-hmm. But the chipping isn't what's going to move the needle. Like big, crazy things that happen move the needle. So that's what this year is going to be for you. This
big
next
swings.
12 months is going to be big breakthroughs, big turning points, beginnings, endings, meeting people, like having, saying yes to things. So my invitation for you is to like just try to say yes to as many things as possible, to put yourself in unusual situations so that you can be ready for these big cataclysmic changes that are coming, because you don't know where they're going to come from.
Truly. I'm smiling so big because it's really affirming, because anytime I have felt a really deep connection to purpose is after big swings. Like I, like for example, launching the podcast, even though I was scared shitless, I knew in my gut it was the right big move. Or the first time I did a live show, it was a different show, but I'm not joking, in fight or flight every minute leading up to it. And then it completely changed my life because it gave me the ability to like do more live shows and now this solo show is blah 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 blah. Like it really and moving to LA was a big swing that completely changed. Like it resonates with me. I my brain wants to only chip away because it feels safer, but I know that what you're saying is completely correct. The big swings make the big difference.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the big milestones, right? Those are the big touch points in your life where you're like, and then everything changed.
Would you say that as I'm part of what I'm working on, and it probably is part of a Virgo thing, is that I have had a very, very tight grip on just about everything. I think I inherited a lot of it from just like being a Jewess, growing up with very hardworking, pragmatic people whom I love. But I think like I've white knuckled so much of my life. And I realized the other day that I've been naturally starting to loosen my grip a little bit, but I can feel like those same thoughts of saying you're not valuable or you're not doing the right thing. That's what starts to tighten the grip again. But do you think that the work that I'm doing to loosen my grip, is that like the right?
I mean, I always advise loosening the grip.
Yeah.
I think that if we have to hold on to something so tightly, it's an indication that it's not a trustworthy situation.
Mm.
And it's not something that we feel safe in. And that feeling of not being safe could come from past traumas, or it could be the real circumstances and conditions are not, we can't lean into them and relax into it. Either way, we have to acknowledge it and work on it. You know, there's moments in our life where we have to really like go hard, right? Like we are putting a presentation together. We are trying to get a job. We are trying to impress somebody. We're trying to like, we have to sort of like put all of our efforts into showing that we believe in ourselves, and this is why someone else should believe in us too. But that is not the same as white knuckling. That actually, and the energy around that has to come from this place of like, I know I deserve this. Let me give this my all to show you why I would be amazing for this.
Yeah.
But that's not white knuckling, right? White knuckling actually doesn't give us a lot of creative space to do that because we don't have that ability to sort of like flex and expand and showcase when we are so constricted and trying to hold everything together so tightly.
Let me ask this. I have also struggled with, and I'm sure some people listening struggle with, the idea of taking up too much space, like that we should not be, maybe it's partly being gay and growing up, being told that you have to survive, you have to fit in. And so a lot of times I struggle with, well, wait, if I'm loosening my grip and I'm being more confident, am I being a quote unquote monster? Am I being a egomaniac? Am I being a diva? Am I being selfish? But I, again, know in my gut that I am not, but the fears come in of like, if you take up too much space, you are asking too much of the world.
I think that I think that being a kind person has nothing to do with taking up too much space. I think that being a generous person is really important, and being thoughtful about, you know, making sure that, you know, people, everyone has an opportunity to talk, and that you're listening and you're being gracious and you're being humble and you're being, you know, just like grateful, right? You know, but that has nothing to do with having a big personality, being an artist, being a creative, making a statement, wanting to be controversial, being controversial, just being who you are. You know, like none of those things have anything to do with being a kind and compassionate person in the world.
Yeah.
And I think that we know that like artists and creatives and people who make a really big impact in culture and in changing culture are distinct, right? They have distinctive personalities. They have distinctive energies. They have distinctive styles. And certainly like they would have been bullied in a really scary suburban high school context for that, right? Because in that setting, when we're all teenagers, homogeny is safe. But part of us, you know, growing up and embracing who we are is recognizing that like that's really boring. Mm-hmm. And if we're creative people, we don't want to be boring. We don't want to be fit. We don't want to just fit in. We want to stand out because we want to be making art that makes a statement. And as artists, of course, our art is going to be different because every single soul is different, right? So we want to have outlets to express our uniqueness. It's very important.
And I think it's also important to acknowledge that being different is a good thing and it's not unsafe. I think that.
Yeah, right. But like also acknowledge that if you came from an environment where that was unsafe, like you had to survive in that environment, right? Yeah. And that leaves scars. And it makes sense that we still are trying to figure out, like, am I safe enough to be myself here? You know?
When you say that there's like a heaviness to my chart and an intensity, do you give advice to people for how to harness that intensity?
You know, it really is. And this is the magic of astrology. It's everything that we're talking about. And so when I say that you feel it, these conversations that you're inviting are a reflection of, you know, what if we were to take the technical terms, we would call them oppositions, we would call them squares, we would sort of give them these geometric shapes in astrology to describe them. But the lived experience is everything you're saying, right? Am I taking up too much space? I struggle with feeling like I'm good enough to be myself. I struggle with the self-doubt, with feeling like there's something wrong with me for having a job, you know, and not just being able to live my life through this. Like all of what you're describing is reflected in your chart in the form of sun square moon, having your ascendant and descendant squaring your north and south nodes of fate. The heaviness in your chart is that you know that you are meant to do amazing things. And yet there's pushback in your chart that makes you question your timing, your path, the choices that you've made, who you are, how you're going to accomplish it. But the cool thing about having a chart that has that depth to it is that you can be so compassionate in recognizing those struggles as universal. Somebody who just has this easy breezy chart and always feels like everything they do is right, it's very hard for them to understand the collective consciousness because the collective consciousness is one of everything you're describing, right? Doubt, fear, disappointment, rejection. That is what we all are experiencing. That is what violence comes from, right? Is us not metabolizing that and finding awareness for it and then redirecting it in these like very low vibration reptilian brain ways, right? But it's the universal experience is that we are all struggling to figure out, how do I live the life that my soul wants me to live?
Yeah.
How do I find the spaces and the self-acceptance to do that? And in your pursuit of doing it, you are helping other people feel, as you said, less alone, right? You are helping people be like, wait, I'm not the only person who's feeling like, when is this all going to happen and take shape? Yeah. Yeah. And articulating your struggle. I mean, communication as a Virgo is something that, as a Virgo sun and as a Gemini moon, both very heavy mercurial communication-based signs, like that's a gift of yours, right? So articulating, bringing people into this journey, creating community around the journey is part of what is going to, is part of your mission, right? Mm. That's part of helping other people feel and participate in something that is a universal experience.
That makes so much sense. And I am breathing all of this in and feeling so grateful that I think the universe sent you to me. And I think that I need to quickly acknowledge that Nathaniel, our gorgeous guest producer, also produces Jonathan Vanessa's show and was so obsessed with your reading of JVN. And I actually mentioned to Nathaniel that I was following you and looking at your stuff. And I was like, I think it'd be amazing to have Aliza on. And he was like, without a shadow of a doubt, we need to have her on. And you are just such a fucking... I think you were sent by the universe. I really do.
I think so too, because it's almost your birthday and it's going to be a really big year. It's going to be a life-changing year for you.
I'm really excited. Do you have any, since we only have a few minutes left, do you have any advice, or do I have to do anything to put myself in the position to welcome in these changes?
That's a good question. I mean, definitely, like, you know, as I mentioned, saying yes to things, putting yourself in unusual, unfamiliar situations so that you can sort of see what is out there and what's available to you. But I would say, let me get your actual solar return chart really quickly up here. You're in Los Angeles?
Yes.
Oh my God, it's such a nice chart for this year. I'm like shook with how this is going to be a year that changes your life. So in so you have the sun, moon, north node, Mercury, all in your 10th house of career this year. Okay, so you're a Sagittarius rising this year. So definitely like trying to expand your horizons, both in terms of going to different places, meeting people from different places, making connections. Like for some reason, I just got this like whole Europe download for you in this moment of like, maybe there's a festival, maybe it's a fringe in Europe or something, something that allows for broadening and expanding the community even more. But also your spiritual horizons, your philosophical horizons, like just like being sort of like coming into like stepping into sort of like a student space of like, I want to learn. Yeah. I want to understand. It's also giving like a good Vice docuseries, you know, of the golden era of like, what does it mean for Eric to like be on a mission, right? And to take us on this mission of discovery. And then maybe part of that is also continuing to you know, we talk about this a lot when we go through our Saturn return, but you have Saturn in a very prominent position in your chart for this year. It's opposite the sun and moon at the base of your chart in the fourth house of home and family. So my advice is to become your own daddy. You know, what does it mean to really daddy yourself? And when I say daddy, I don't just mean like sexy daddy. I mean also like protector daddy. Mm. I mean daddy who's like, we're doing this. I got you. I'm going to look after you. I'm going to give you like, here's how I'm going to set you up for success in your life. You know,
basically all the ways that I try to seek validation and other things really get it from my daddy within.
Yeah. Your inner daddy.
My inner daddy. God, that's so fucking good, Aliza. And I'm just giving snaps of gratitude. And I just, yeah, I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you. But I do want to ask you the final podcast question before we round out this interview. As a gay ass podcast, a gay journalist, Aliza Kelly, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
I'm going to save, and this is really out of left field, I'm going to save Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, it is beautifully out of left field. Tell me why Michelle Pfeiffer. Is it Catwoman?
It's Catwoman.
Oh.
It's Catwoman, but it's also Scarface.
Oh.
Yeah.
By the way, Michelle Pfeiffer, there's a lot of cultural touchstones for Michelle Pfeiffer. Not only, of course, are you naming the big ones, but she was also in the John Travolta Hairspray movie musical, which I think is very important. Obviously, Grease.
Grease 2
is huge. And huge. I need to shout out my gay husband, Matthew, did dress up as Catwoman for Halloween a few years ago. And it was one of the hottest, most amazing costumes ever. And I think Michelle Pfeiffer is a character actress worth saving. Aliza, what a gorgeous answer.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that was a download.
Really, really well done. And I have to say, every step of this interview has been a slay.com. Will you please tell our listeners where to follow you and if there's anything you would like to plug?
Follow me everywhere at Aliza Kelly. I'm on the internet, believe it or not. And then I also have my own podcast. It's called Horoscope Weekly. And new episodes come out every Monday. And then on Wednesdays, it's the Astrology, which is when we talk about what astrology actually means for you.
Hell fucking yeah. Everybody go. Season 2 just dropped of Horoscope Weekly. It's such a great podcast. Also, Aliza has amazing work in The Cut and her Instagram is divine. So the links are all in the description. Aliza Kelly, this has been such an amazing birthday gift, gay ass gift. And I'm so endlessly grateful to you. And I think we should maybe like in a year or after this next year, we should do a reunion and talk about how everything has changed for me. And I can't wait to tell you.
Yeah, when we're at your like giant studio and like for real. And we're like, we have that like Wayne's World moment where we're like, how did we get here? Yes.
Yes. 100%. All right. We're manifesting. We're just planning. We're planning. We're scheduling. It's we're blocking the calendar. And Aliza Kelly, stay gay and stay fabouche. Thanks for joining me on That's a Gay Ass Podcast. If you enjoyed this interview with Aliza Kelly, let me know either in the comments on YouTube or do me a fave and leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. I would love to get those numbers ear. Speaking of gorgeous numbers, we've got our next bonus episode on Substack with Bradley Gibson. He was Simba in The Lion King on Broadway. He played Hercules in Disney's Hercules here in the US, and he's done a lot more amazing things, including marrying a gorgeous man and getting swindled into a threesome. He also grew up Mormon, and so I asked the question of like, are there Black Mormons? And it turns out, yeah, there are. That's at Substack, linked in the description, with a lot more bonus episodes to come. I'll see you next week for another gorgeous gay ass guest. And do me a favor, stay gay.
Bye.
You've been listening to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, hosted by me, Eric Williams. If you want to see and hear more, make sure you subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and follow the Instagram at Gay Ass Podcast. For more gay assery, the real girlies are over on Substack, where you get bonus episodes every single week and live chats with me and other gay ass guests. That's a Gay Ass Podcast is executive produced by Eric Williams and produced by Nathaniel McClure. We'll see you next week.